Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, what is pre-agency? And why is Rob Pelinka talking about it? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on Saturdays and Sundays. Locked On Lakers, always there for you. It will never be behind a paywall, always free. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show, a channel zooming towards 12,000 subscribers. We really appreciate all the support we're getting there. The channel was particularly active following the win on Saturday. We put up a quick show following that one, and people were really excited about the results there. We're going to talk a little bit more in this show about some of the impact that the new guys made, how important they're going to be, certainly tonight in Portland, since LeBron's almost certainly not going to play. We'll also get to Rob Pelinka's comments, Andy, about pre-agency. He spoke to the media ahead of the game on Saturday, talked about their moves, talked about pre-agency. We'll talk about what that means. And why it is a good thing for the Lakers. But let's start with Monday's game, Andy. LeBron unlikely to play. Mo Bamba does have one more game before he can make his debut on account of shenanigans when still a member of the Orlando Magic. But it's going to be another night where we get to see. I'm sure if he knew he was going to be traded to Lakers, he wouldn't have done it. But this is another night where the new guys and the importance of Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell and Jared Vanderbilt on full display, probably even really more noticeable and more important given the absence of LeBron.
Yeah. I mean, the Lakers, as we've talked about a zillion times, have no margin for error moving forward. This game that they had against the Warriors was huge. A, just because they needed the win, but B, because the Warriors are a team that they're chasing. Portland is another team like that. And, you know, Portland did not do anything significant at the deadline to really get better. And, you know, they're a team that has had a difficult time getting a bead on trying to build properly around Damian Lillard, or I guess
the only move they made, just for reference, was to trade away Josh Hart to New York.
Yeah. They brought in Cameron. Yeah. I guess the Blazers did not get the memo that he's supposed to be going to the Lakers, but be that as it may, you know, they're in an odd position right now. And, you know, as long as Damian Lillard remains committed to Portland, which seems to be the case, he does not seem to want to go anywhere else, I guess, unless the Blazers just seem uncommitted to him. But, you know, this is another really big opportunity. It's another game where AD really needs to start getting back on track on both sides of the ball over the course of an entire game. And like you said, it's another opportunity for the new guys to show what they can do.
And, you know, these last two games, really, before the All-Star break, we learned that this weekend that Zion Williamson is going to be out weeks following the All-Star break. You know, that hamstring that he pulled apparently re-aggravated. You never like to root for anybody to get hurt, certainly not a talent as dynamic as Zion Williamson. But from the Lakers standpoint, he wasn't going to play in that game, but it is indicative now of a couple teams that are in front of them that are in a little bit of trouble. And it makes these games huge. Like LeBron may play on Wednesday before the break, but it's possible he doesn't, I guess. But either way, what strikes me about these, it's like you notice the difference in the rotation and the difference in the way things work. Because I realize, you know, Russell Westbrook was in the rotation and he is gone. Patrick Beverley was in the rotation and he is gone. But even in that first game, Andy, you could see a difference in the way this team operated, particularly in the half court, that I think is going to be very significant for them going forward. You know, Beasley didn't make a shot, you know, didn't make a three-pointer, I should say. But you could still see what his presence there does to defenses because they know they have to respect him. High volume 3-point shooter with a good track record of accuracy. You could see what D'Angelo Russell is capable of doing in the half court, mixing with his teammates. It looked the potential for what was there with the balance that they brought in. I was pleased. I think a lot of Laker fans were pleased. I was definitely pleased.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this during Sunday's show, the mini show, but D'Angelo Russell is somebody who has never looked to push pace. Like, that's not the guy he is. We covered D'Angelo and were around the team a lot, like basically on a daily basis during his first stint with the Lakers. And I remember Luke Walton really wanted D'Angelo to be looking to run, you know, like every time he got the ball in, like off a steal or off a defensive rebound, somebody gets it to him. He wanted D'Lo to push, and that just, it's not who he ever has been. And I don't think D'Lo was looking to defy Luke or anything like that. It's just his comfort zone as a player, his wheelhouse is much more of a measured pace. He's much more of a prober. He's somebody who gets into the crevices. He's very good at playing off contact from a defender. He's very good at shading defenders off his body. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that's going to be a bit of a different wrinkle for the Lakers because obviously this season they've been so much more effective in transition as opposed to in the half court. But I do think that while Russell's presence in and of itself does not automatically make them a great half-court team, I do think the potential for them being better in the half-court increases just from D'Angelo's presence as somebody that can knock down open outside shots. He's not somebody that you're going to be putting a center on to basically sag off and not guard him. You know, you can't do that with Russell. It's going to create more driving lanes having him out there. It's going to create better passing lanes having him out there. And then somebody like LeBron, or I guess to a lesser extent, Dennis Schroeder, and he's somebody that I want to be talking about later in the show, their ability to manufacture better half-court offense obviously depends on other guys knocking down shots or cutting at the right time, whatever. But I do think it can be better by virtue of having D'Lo out there as opposed to Russell Westbrook or even opposed to Patrick Beverley.
I completely agree because, you know, Beverley's 3-point shooting improved as the season went on, but not at the kind of volume with Beverley. I'm sorry.
He doesn't have the
gravity. Russell and Beasley. Right. Or the volume and Russell and Beasley together, you're talking about like 16 3-pointers a game between the two of them. Give or take. Like that's what the Lakers added to their offense at a good percentage. It's not 16 that you're like awesome. And you know, we got an interesting comment on the YouTube page, and I apologize for mispronouncing the name, which I'm sure I will, from a viewer, Quan Xiao Wong, I believe is, I hope I'm getting it at least close. He says, it's not just what it does to the offense, but I think this is an interesting comment. He said, I think the reduction of pace from D'Lo, because we talked about it on the Saturday-Sunday show, will actually help Ham in his decision-making. Sometimes I felt there was just too much to process for Ham given his inexperience as a head coach. I took that to mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding, that he's almost saying like the pace of these games is almost too quick for him, for Darvin to kind of make the necessary adjustments and all that. I don't necessarily buy that, but what I do think is true is that Darvin's rotations were in part based on the idea that the Lakers constantly had to be moving and constantly had to be pushing pace and constantly had to be figuring out ways to leverage potential defensive disruption into offense. I'm not saying it worked all the time. I'm not saying even that was correct with his personnel choices. But some of that, though, is predicated on the idea of your half-court offense isn't very good. And so you really do need to run. Russ in the half court, even when he was sort of effective, was so specific in how it had to happen in terms of the ISO plays and this and that. It was still disruptive. It still wasn't free flowing. Now you have the makings of a real half court offense. I'm curious, we'll talk, maybe talk about this after the break here, if you think that will have any influence or could have any influence on the types of lineups that Darvin puts out on the floor, because it's been a major sticking point for Lakers fans. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about Rob Pelinka next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by LinkedIn. As a small business owner or hiring manager, success in 2023 all depends on your team members, and that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by using the targeting tools to match open roles with people who have the skills, the values, and the experience to help you achieve your goals. LinkedIn goes beyond resume data by using insights from your job post, your company, and their 875 million member profiles to land the most qualified candidates. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants all in one platform. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. And it is still early in 2023. This is when you want to establish your fiscal success. Now set that tone. LinkedIn can make it happen for you. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the most qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so it's pretty clear, Andy, if you follow the team, you follow Lakers social media, you follow our comments page, anything related to, anybody talking about anything when it comes to these Lakers, people want Darvin to play bigger. And now the Lakers have more size available to them. You've acquired Jared Vanderbilt, who looked great in the game on Saturday, showed you exactly why the Lakers were, and so many teams, to be honest, were big on him. And they've went out and picked up Rui Hachimura. They have more useful size that they can put out. Still have a lot of backcourt players as well. Do you think, though, that the fact that they can run a more competent half-court offense, so you have Hachimura as a scorer who can do some stuff up front, you have Vanderbilt now, do you think you'll see more larger lineups, or are we still looking at a lot of essentially three-guard lineups to go with either LeBron and AD or LeBron, AD, and whoever else is on the floor, one of them sitting?
No, I mean, well, yes, in the sense that I think once LeBron is back, the starting lineup is going to be Schroeder, Russell, Rui, LeBron, and AD. Mm-hmm. And that's three forwards or two forwards and a center or a forward, a center, and whatever the hell you want to call LeBron, because he can be whatever he wants. And D'Angelo Russell, who is considerably bigger than Patrick Beverley. So they've already gone bigger as it is. Like if you went with a lineup that was Schroeder, Russell, Troy Brown, who's often been the starting small forward, mm-hmm. LeBron and AD, that would still be bigger than what they had been running out before. Because again, D'Angelo Russell is much bigger than Patrick Beverley. And this actually gets to something I saw a lot of during Saturday's game. There was a comment that I saw from @JG_legendary24, George or Jorge, however he pronounces his name. Can we please ask Coach Ham why he continues to start small ball lineups, trading to have size and shooters and still the same? Can you guys please ask that question to him? He's asking us and some other reporters. And when it comes to Schroeder specifically, if you think he should be off the bench because you think a better starting unit is possible, that's a reasonable complaint. But it's really important to remember Schroeder with Russell is not Schroeder with Beverley. Like mm-hmm. D'Angelo Russell has good size for a shooting guard. So like the idea that starting Schroeder with whoever else it is, unless it is like a true undersized three guard lineup, that's not the same thing as before. Like Devin Booker and Chris Paul is size-wise, I'm not saying skill or talent-wise, but just size-wise, that is essentially the same backcourt as Dennis Schroeder and D'Angelo Russell. It is essentially the same size. Nobody would say that backcourt is too small. So again, if you think Schroeder off the bench is better just from a personnel standpoint, mixing and matching standpoint.
Start Malik Beasley, you start yeah. Reeves, you start someone else. Right.
Right. Sure. I mean, I'm here for any of those. And look, I think listeners familiar with this show know that in a perfect world, I would not want Dennis Schroeder starting anyway. Like in a perfect world, I think he's more of a high-end bench player than a legitimate starting point guard. And he's really more of a shooting guard in a point guard's body. But that being said, there are also reasons I can understand why Darvin wants Schroeder starting, you know, for point of attack defense, the ability to drive, just some familiarity, because they only have like 25 games left this season. They don't have a ton of time to figure out things that may not be necessary to figure out. But either way, the too small thing for the lineups that he's going with now no longer applies. Like, there are plenty of other reasons to complain about Darvin. Complain about the legitimate things, not that.
Well, it's funny too. Like, I, at the very least, I would start Schroeder for one more game, because these games where LeBron or AD have been out, and you know, you put, he has tended to thrive. He is not on all of them, and there have been a couple where, you know, he didn't have a great game, but generally speaking,
lately,
Schroeder has played very well in these games.
Yeah.
So I would at least wait one more game. It's funny, like, so much of this, the frustration builds to the point where you could see, you see frustration, and you get annoyed just by the sort of the visceral reaction to seeing those three guards. It made perfect sense, and it worked on Saturday, because some of it is personnel, some of it is who you're playing, and you want the mobility of Schroeder, Reeves, and Russell, who was, you know, did a pretty good job by D'Angelo Russell standards, you know, particularly defensively, given what Golden State is doing with Klay Thompson and Poole. So that made a lot of sense, and it worked. The Lakers had a really good defensive game plan and executed it very well. They talked about it as a group after the game, and the numbers backed it up. I hope, and I think, you know, part of what Darvin liked about Beverly was the predictability. You kind of knew what you were going to get from him, that he trusted his.
That's a weird thing to say about Patrick Beverly. Like, it's,
but you understand what I'm getting at.
Like, considering how volatile he can be, but I understand.
He liked the veteraniness of him. You know, there's
predictability to his volatility.
Correct. But some of it was sort of necessity. It's like, yeah, it's imperfect, but he's one of the guys that we can stick up and get up in Kevin Durant's grill, because we don't, it's like, you know, Rui Hachimura is bigger. I'm not sure he's more successful against a player like that, you know, than Beverly is. You know, sometimes yes, sometimes no. You can't play him if he's gone. And I think, you know,
right,
to some degree, you might see more lineup flexibility and lineup choices just because some of the guys that he leaned on are not there. There were moments when Westbrook played, I think, where Darvin felt it was necessary, not necessarily ideal. But now Russ is gone, and you're filling in with much more coherent, blendable pieces that I do think, I am optimistic over these last 25 games, Darvin will use differently than the crew he had at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I can promise you, you will not see the Schroeder, Beverly, Westbrook threesome moving forward. Like, I can promise you that
not gonna
problem
happen.
Is solved. And frankly, I don't think you're going to be seeing a ton of lineups where you've got like an undersized Lonnie Walker at the three with two undersized guards alongside him. Like, you know, sometimes cross matchups happen and things like that, or you're just looking for different spots to play guys. And all of this too is affected by LeBron not being available right now. Like, LeBron not being there is going to make all of the lineups feel smaller, because LeBron is a big dude doing the things that he does. But, you know, it's important to remember too that as far as like the starting backcourt goes, there are other options, but I don't think any of them are dead obvious. Like, I've seen people calling for D'Lo and Beasley. I think that backcourt would get eaten alive defensively. Like, to me, that is Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, or Damian Lillard and Anthony Simons, without the same offensive explosion potential to at least potentially offset the defensive issues that are going to be there. Like, D'Lo is going to start, and he should start. You need somebody alongside him that is at minimum a neutral defender, but you'd like that guy to be somewhere between neutral and plus and just straight up plus. That's not Malik Beasley. Like, I don't think that's practical.
There does seem to be some sort of argument a little bit on Beasley's defense. He's a better defender than Russell is, but he's not known. You know, he does not have a Jared Vanderbilt style defensive profile. I tend to be more optimistic about a lot of these things than people are, and I tend to be a little more sympathetic about rotation choices than a lot of people are. But I do think, like, this is a wildly different group with fewer giant holes that need to be filled in certain ways, because, you know, the shooting is better. The ball movement certainly isn't going to be hurt. Like, as a unit, like Russell Westbrook, it moves the ball as an individual effectively. What is he like? You know, where is he on the assist list? Top 10? Like, 10. That's a lot of assists. Like, that's, but it's very specific. This is more basketball-y when you have the type of guys. You still have Reeves around. You know, Schroeder may not be a point guard, but he still knows how to pass. Russell isn't Chris Paul, but he knows how to pass. And I am looking forward to what I think will be more coherent offensive play. And we'll see what it looks like on Monday. This is a big game, and it's right there for them to take. Really, both of these games before the break are very large and very available. So we'll see how that goes. Let's get to Rob Pelinka next, because what he said before the game in San Francisco was really interesting and gets us some stuff we've been talking about a lot on the show. So that's next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by FanDuel, the midway point of the NBA season. It is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, really easy to use, and then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained, or you can get a little saucy with an exclusive bet like the 2x3. 2 3-pointers scored in this first 3 minutes. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. As of this recording, the Celtics are currently 2.7-1 to win the title, followed by the Bucks at 4.1-1. The Lakers coming in at 55-1. If you like what you saw Saturday against Golden State, do with that info what you will. Don't, though, miss out on the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA.
So before we get to Pelinka's comments, do want to remind everyone today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/lockedonNBA. So before the game on Saturday, Rob Pelinka talking to the media, updating everybody on the trade deadline and all that stuff, was asked about sort of the moves in general and what they mean and sort of what the Lakers are trying to accomplish. He said this: I think a deep dive into this, you can almost look at it as pre-agency. We very intentionally planned these moves to provide optionality in July, meaning this offseason. It's a really exciting time, I think, for Lakers Nation. And what he's talking about is the Lakers traded away 6 guys that were all on expiring contracts, some of whom really would have been very difficult to bring back for 6 guys who are controllable in one way or another for next season. So that gives them a lot of optionality for who they want to keep, who they don't, what kind of roster they want to put together, what kind they don't. And really importantly, Andy, it could help get them off of the minimum contract train to where you have LeBron and AD making max contracts, and you have maybe D'Angelo Russell at 22 or 23, and they can keep Malik Beasley for 16.5, and Vanderbilt's there around $5 million, and Hachimura's probably $8 or $9 million. Reeves is probably $8 or $9 million, I would think, something like that. It's like all of a sudden you have, may not have a ton of draft picks, but you have actually a tradable stack of salary slots in your on your roster. That's been a major problem for them the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, this whole pre-agency thing, You know, like, as much as it's a very Palinka-y way of talking about this stuff, I mean, I couldn't help but laugh when I heard Palinka do this, because we know that he's been holding back on a lot of this stuff. Like, it's been a while since Palinka busted out the Palinka speak. And, you know, frankly, he's been smart not to do it because the last year and a half has not been the right time. No, but
he's barely spoken in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I know. And it's often led to Genie speaking, which hasn't not necessarily gone not that well better. Either. But the thing, first of all, as much as I'm making fun of the word, I think he's 100% correct in the way that he's laying this out. I think they have far more flexibility and options. Like, just the players that they can potentially retain moving forward are so much better than the ones that they had just a week ago, or, you know, however long, if you want to go back to however long ago it was that they brought in Rui Hachimura. When
that's sort of the beginning. I think that's fair, because that's the beginning of this process.
Right. So a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, beginning with Hachimura to where they are now, their ability to bring back players is so much better than it had been before. Frankly, before it was borderline non-existent, because a lot of the guys that they had, they would not be able to bring back even if they wanted to, because they were on 1 year veterans minimums deals, and the way the CBA works, they were likely going to get outbid. It's what happened to them last year with Malik Monk in last offseason. But it sounds to me a lot, and this made me very excited, that Palinka is doing, or at least maneuvering in a direction that could be build next year's team now. Start giving yourself an opportunity at continuity and building towards next season, where you're not making your team worse in the short run. They made their team better in the short run. This roster is better than the one they had before the trade deadline. But the fact remains, they may just have run out of time to really put themselves in a position to make a playoff run. And if that's the case, it is what it is. It sucks, but that's reality. But they are in a far better position to actually try to build towards something next season and actually hit the ground running and not have to spend 20 games just figuring out who plays with who fits with who, you know, where guys want the ball, all of that stuff. They can actually work off, you know, knowledge of each other, which is just a crazy concept lately.
Yeah, it is. I'll do this. I think you're 100% right about next year. And I think if I had to guess, I think Russell will play well enough that they'll try to work something out. I think Hachimura, as long as these guys don't either get massive deals somewhere else or massively overvalue themselves and what their market is going to be, I think reasonable contracts can be worked out for a lot of these guys. I don't want to overstate what bringing this group back as a supporting cast means. I don't want to say that, you know, if you can, you know, develop, you know, you have a supporting cast of Bamba and Vanderbilt and Beasley and Hachimura and Reeves and whatever, like, you are like, that's a killer supporting cast. You would still probably have some flaws in it, but what it is, you know, these are all guys who are 26 years old and younger. They are all guys who you could sign for multiple years and still not get a lot of downside in the contract. And what that does for the Lakers too is it helps build an infrastructure that if you do end up needing to transition out of an Anthony Davis, LeBron core, because LeBron retires, because he goes plays with Bronny, because you trade Anthony Davis, because you do something, or you just want to you have an opportunity to bring in another star. You can do that with a core of guys that can then play with that group. You're not completely starting over in it. Like, these guys are young enough that you can keep some of them around for whatever is coming next, not just next year, but the next couple of years. And I think that's really important to have this potential to build a coherent team. Not, as you say, not just for next year, but for down the road a little bit. It is much more promising, especially too, because they got way more value now than they ever would have been able to get in the summertime with $25 million or whatever they would have had to spend.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Russell, Vanderbilt, Beasley. Like you can't sneak all that in.
Hachimura
with it, and still, if you don't make these trades before the deadline. So it's really excellent work, not just for this year, but for looking forward. And I don't think this will elevate them into the elite status of the Western Conference teams, but it's a much better supporting cast. You're still leaning on LeBron and AD to be excellent, but you got a little more wiggle room. You got a little more support, and you have more pieces to go out and try to improve the team. Should that be something you can do?
Yeah. And the bottom line is, if LeBron can't stay healthy and play at a high level, and if Anthony Davis especially cannot stay healthy and play at a high level, none of this matters at all. And there is, we've had this discussion many times on this show, the question of whether or not they should even be continuing in this direction, and whether it feels like they've already gotten the best out of the LeBron and AD pairing, you know, whether or not it's practical to continue having so much hinged on a guy that, you know, beginning next year will be in his 21st season, will be turning 39. Like, these are all legitimate, real questions to be asking, whether they are internally or not, because it doesn't tend to be the way this organization
or just operates. Because it's like where it's like we know what the problems are with the LeBron AD core, but like, where do we find one better? I mean, right. That is actually a fair answer to that question.
It may be a fair question. It may be a fair counter to that question. I question whether or not the original question ever gets asked at all. But either way, and another thing that Pelinka did point out was they have the ability to create a totally clean cap sheet during the offseason. Like, if they want to, they can let Hachimura walk. They can let D'Angelo Russell walk. They can decline Malik Beasley's team option for next season. Jared Vanderbilt and Mo Bamba have very small guarantees in their contract for 23-24. Otherwise, they can essentially be outright waived for very little financial pain. The Lakers, if they want, can put themselves in the position to go, I guess, big-ish game hunting, which is essentially a different way of saying Kyrie hunting. I would like to think that at minimum, they are not trying to put themselves in a position where they are planning based around Kyrie's whims 5 months from now, because whether you want Kyrie on this team or not moving forward, I think we can all agree trying to predict how he's going to feel in July is a fool's errand. And it is certainly not something that I would be anchoring my future plans around. But either way, if they want to, they have the ability to basically wipe the decks clear and try to add a third star essentially willing to take a haircut, because they wouldn't have enough to go full max.
Right. I don't think that's the direction they're going to go. I don't think this is the right offseason to do that anyway. The flexibility is certainly there. You don't have access for one first round pick and some seconds. You don't generally have access to guys that are under long-term contracts that are teams really want to keep and really want to build around, because they're not trading those people. You know, there's a reason D'Angelo Russell was there, and, you know, they wanted to, in Minnesota, they wanted to swap him out with Mike Conley, and why that made sense for them, on the floor, but also as a matter of structure, you know, for the contracts going forward. But having the optionality is nice. I do like that they're at least talking about keeping these guys around. We'll see what happens. And some of that's going to be predicated on what the Lakers do over these last 25 games. And if they go 15-10, even if it means they don't reach that top six and they don't, but if they go 15-10 over these last, 25 games and show some potential for next year, I do think it's a strong indication that they'll try to at least keep this group together. And that starts, Andy, with what they do in Portland on Monday. Locked On Lakers will be there, of course, after the game and talking about it. And you can find us both the audio version and on YouTube and really engage with what we're doing here. We try to, as you saw earlier in the show, wrap your comments whether on the YouTube page or Twitter or wherever it might be, into what we do here. We certainly use a lot of it for inspiration, even if we don't shout you out by name. So please, please, please subscribe there and become part of that conversation. We'll see everybody on Tuesday.